There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
Probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds. You're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. Joining me this week, Greg Smith, Hill Varsity Extraordinaire. Greg, hello. How are you?
I am very well. I am excited and fired up for White Sox playoff baseball. So I'm good.
I was going to ask. So the Sox are in the playoffs. Have they started? I follow no baseball.
As of this recording, no, they have not started. Their first game is today, Thursday. On the road against Houston. So,
well, I hope they lose.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
I know nothing about baseball, but I know that as a Cubs family, I'm supposed to root against the Sox. So there you go.
Well, the Cubs stink, so that's good.
I do know that. I do know that was a thing this year. We moved to Chicago and then they pawned off basically everybody that was on that World Series.
Yeah, they really did. That, like, in the span of a few days, it was actually kind of fun to see.
Okay, I was gonna call it remarkable, but fun is another way we can take it. That's fine. Couple of housekeeping things before we get to the podcast. Greg has his own show, the Straight Up Breakdown Podcast. Make sure you listen to that every week. Greg, when does it come out? Tuesdays?
It comes out Tuesday mornings, 9 a.m. Central Time.
Yep. Subscribe to that wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave him a 5-star review. It's a wonderful show. Make sure you listen to it every week. We also have other shows that are hosted by some of your favorite Hail Varsity voices. Brandon Vogel has his own, the I-80 Preview Podcast. You guys can listen to a Michigan preview for the game that we're going to talk about later on this podcast. That one you can also find anywhere and everywhere. The I-80 Preview Podcast. Aaron Sorensen and Sasha Durkin have their own, the Mind Your Own Podcast. And then Jacob Padilla is on with Damon Benning for the Nebraska Preps post-game show. We are a proud part of the Herd At Media Network. All of those podcasts can be found on our website. If you go to hailvarsity.com/network, I believe. And they can also be found wherever you listen to podcasts. So subscribe to all of them. Give everybody a review. Listen to everybody's shows. They're all great. Except for Jacob's. Don't listen to his. We'll see. We'll see. I wonder if he listens to this podcast. So this is going to be my way to find out if he listens to this podcast.
Just keep doing that until he responds.
It was either going to be that or start taking shots at the Suns, but they were in the finals and my team was losing to the Clippers at the end of the season when they were losing to avoid the Lakers. So I'm not really in a position where I can take shots at other NBA teams right now. I will be a closet Lakers fan this season, or maybe in out and about Lakers fan this season with Russell Westbrook there. That's beside the point.
I am on board with that.
You did say that I could have honorary Lakers fandom status this year.
You are welcome anytime. Yeah, you're welcome anytime.
Well, not anytime. I don't want to jump on the bandwagon.
Okay. I don't know if
you watched Josh Giddey in his first preseason game, but 18 points and I'm just gonna say he looked like the second coming of Magic Johnson. I'm just gonna say. So
I mean, that's a lot, but no,
I don't need to be jumping on any bandwagons yet, because the Thunder are going to be winning an NBA title in the next 3 years, and then we are going to trade off one of our future MVPs, and then we're going to lose another future MVP that we drafted, and the whole thing is going to start all over again, because that is our lot in life. Shouts to Cam for producing this episode every week. Shouts to you all for listening to this episode every week. If you are not already, make sure you have HailVarsity.com bookmarked, whatever browser you use to surf the internet, because Hail Varsity gives you all of the coverage that you need. Go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Make sure you're getting the magazine. Make sure you're getting premium content. Greg was busy this week when it came to not just premium content, but just content in general. So make sure you're reading all his stuff. It's really good. And the rest of the teams as well. Greg, let's start with a broader college football discussion first before we get into Nebraska, Michigan, which should be a pretty fun game. I have a question for you. There are 17 remaining unbeaten teams in college football. as of recording this, we're recording this on a Thursday, 17 remaining unbeaten teams after week six. 10 of them are from the Power Five level, but 8 of those still have to play another team that is currently unbeaten. So let me run through some of these teams for you. Number one, Alabama. They're obviously unbeaten. In terms of remaining strength of schedule, and I'm going to use ESPN's FPI metric, resume metric for all of this, they are 6th in remaining strength of schedule. Number two, Georgia, also unbeaten, 8th in remaining strength of schedule. They still have games against Auburn, Kentucky, and Florida. Iowa, which plays Penn State this weekend, is 37th in remaining strength of schedule. Penn State is really the last tough team, depending on what happens with Nebraska down the stretch. That could be a fun game at the end of the year. Number four, Penn State is 4th in remaining strength of schedule. They are unbeaten. They have already beaten Wisconsin and Auburn to start the year. They go at Iowa this weekend. They still have games at Ohio State, at Maryland, Michigan at home, at Michigan State. Good Lord, that team. If they have one loss coming out of the season, then put them in the playoffs. Number six, Oklahoma is there, unbeaten, 27th in remaining strength of schedule. They have games against Texas and Oklahoma State to highlight. Michigan, 11th. They've got, obviously, Nebraska this weekend. They go at Michigan State. They've got Indiana. They've got at Penn State, at Maryland, and then Ohio State to end the year. That's a little bit of a bear for them, too. Michigan State is unbeaten, 16th. They still play Michigan at Ohio State and Penn State. Oklahoma State is unbeaten. They're 15th in remaining strength of schedule. They still play at Texas. They've got a game against TCU, at West Virginia, at Iowa State, Oklahoma still. Kentucky, surprise Kentucky. Also, I was looking at this. This is going to make some people mad. Wandale Robinson, I think, is in the top 5 in the country in terms of yards per route run.
Yeah, he's so number one in yards in the SEC right now.
He's basically playing the role that everybody thought he was going to play at Nebraska, and he's doing it really well, and they are 5-0. So, that's a thing. They still have – Kentucky still has LSU at Georgia, and that's it. Never mind. They have 2 tough games left on their schedule. There's a realistic possibility they could be like an 11-1 team. Challenge for the East. They already beat Florida, which kind of sucks if you're a Florida fan because you're not supposed to lose to Kentucky. And then Wake Forest is number 19, 31st in remaining strength of schedule. They've got at North Carolina, at Clemson, at Boston College, NC State, but the ACC sucks. So there is a scenario, Greg, where Wake freaking Forest exits the regular season as the only unbeaten team left at the Power Five level, because as I just ran through all of these schedules, every single one of these teams has tough games on their schedule remaining. Alabama, you know,
that's relative because of them. So
yeah, like, they got Auburn, and then they got the SEC championship, and the Iron Bowl is never easy to predict. It's one of those like toss out the record. It's a rivalry game games. Everybody else has tough games remaining on the schedule, and a lot of these teams are going to play a lot of the other teams, particularly teams in the Big Ten. So there's a scenario where we could get no unbeaten Power Five teams just because of the way that the start of the season has shaken out. So there are 2 teams in the top 10 that are from the Group of 5 level. You have number 5 Cincinnati, which just beat Notre Dame and already has a win over Indiana. And then you have BYU right there, unbeaten. You also still have Coastal Carolina that is unbeaten. And then you have SMU a little bit further down the standings. What are you doing with the Group of 5 teams if those teams go unbeaten? You are a noted Group of 5 hater. You do not want to see a Group of 5 teams in the college football playoff. We've had these discussions on this podcast before. What do you want to do with Cincinnati if they win out? Let's start with Cincinnati because they got the best resume of any Group of 5 team maybe ever for the playoff.
Yeah, I think, I'm glad you started with Cincinnati because I actually think this will make me look better because you're starting with the team that I actually would give a shot to, with the caveat that there are no undefeated group of Power Five schools, but even if there was one, I think Cincinnati is building a resume in which they would deserve to be included in the college football playoff for this year. part of it being that they had to have the success that they did, you know, previously kind of leading up to this. But then also if they were to, they obviously already beat Notre Dame. They end up taking down UCF in a couple of weeks and then win the AAC. Like, I think that they would have a legitimate shot based on their resume and then having a couple of things break their way. So I'm okay with Cincinnati being included in this discussion.
But that's with the caveat that there are no unbeaten teams left?
I don't want to say no unbeaten teams, because let's say Alabama is unbeaten, but everyone else has one loss and they're undefeated, and Cincinnati is undefeated. Like, I think that they would merit real consideration at that point. But part of the problem for Cincinnati in that scenario is that, like you said, with like Penn State, if Penn State makes it out of the Big Ten this year with one loss in the conference, like, they've got to go in. That's a bear of a schedule down the stretch. And there's a couple other teams that kind of fit into that category too. And I actually think that if a team comes out of the Big Ten with one loss, they deserve to be in based on how good the conference is this year. So, like, there's just a couple of things there. And Cincinnati, though, I think that they're hanging around. I think that they have by far the best shot, at least in my mind. They would be the only team that to put them into consideration for the college football playoff.
Okay, here is a fun exercise. Let's just focus on Cincinnati for a second, because pollsters love Cincinnati. Like I said, they're fifth in the polls.
Yeah.
But ESPN's systems don't love Cincinnati as much. They are 14th in FPI behind Pitt at number 10. Pitt! Kenny Pickett! Kenny Pickett! he's having a great season. They're behind Pitt, Penn State, Iowa, and Ole Miss in FPI. They are 11th in S&P Plus. Okay, here's the fun thing about some of these systems. Guess who is number 10 right ahead of Cincinnati in S&P Plus? Just off the cuff, without looking, just guess who number 10 would be.
Ole Miss.
It's a team with a losing record.
What?
Yeah.
One
and
know.
Three, Wisconsin.
What? Okay, come on, man.
Yep.
I would pick 1-3 Wisconsin to beat Cincinnati. I would just
No. But let's have this scenario. Alabama makes it unbeaten to the SEC championship game, because really there doesn't appear to be a team left on their schedule that will challenge them unless they just poop the bed.
Right.
Georgia makes it to the SEC title game with one loss on the schedule. They either lose to Auburn or Kentucky or Florida. They lose one of those three games, and then Kentucky doesn't go unbeaten. They trip up, and Georgia still makes it in. Georgia's one-loss Georgia team makes it to the SEC championship, and Georgia beats Alabama. So you have a one-loss SEC champion Georgia. You have a one-loss SEC loser in Alabama. And then you have Iowa and Penn State rematching in the Big Ten championship game, where the loser of whatever of this game this weekend wins. And so you basically have four teams, the top four teams in the AP poll right now, being Alabama, Georgia, Iowa, and Penn State. You have two conference champions among them, and then you have two one-loss teams. And let's say Alabama loses the SEC, and then, I don't know, Penn State wins this weekend, and then Iowa beats them for the Big Ten championship. Do you put all four of those teams in the playoff? Because right now they look to be four of the best teams in the country.
I mean, it would be strong, under strong consideration. Yeah, I think I would, actually, because I think that the Big Ten needs to get more credit for like how tough it's going to be to run through that, even with one loss, if in that scenario, especially. And the SEC always gets that credit. That credit would be even more if it was Alabama that lost the SEC championship, because they would definitely get in. So yeah, I think that it would be in that scenario, I would be totally fine with an all Big Ten, all SEC battle royale to show who has the ultimate supremacy, the Big Ten.
This is just shaping up for absolute heartbreak for Cincinnati. Yes. And I really want Cincinnati to make it into the playoff, but the way the season has started, you have three Big Ten teams in the top 10 right now. All three of them are unbeaten, and none of them are Ohio State. Ohio State is like still there, able to just destroy team Back seasons if they wanted to. If they figured things out, they're kind of just like hanging out right there. Iowa doesn't have much left on its schedule after you get past Penn State. I don't think Wisconsin is very good. I don't think Northwestern is very good. Nebraska could be tough at the end of the season, but depending on how the next few weeks go, that could be
a fascinating game.
It could be, you know, we could probably imagine five or six different iterations of Nebraska at that point in the season, right?
Right.
So like this is shaping up to where Alabama and Georgia look like the two best teams in the country through the first 6 weeks. Yeah. I feel like they're going to get in regardless of what happens. That's kind of the feel that I get because they just look so much better than everyone else. I don't think Alabama is going to lose more than one game on the rest of its regular season schedule. And I don't necessarily think Georgia is going to lose more than one game on the rest of its regular season schedule. So you might already have two spots taken up. And then with the way that the Big Ten is playing, with Oklahoma still being there at number six in the polls, if they beat, you know, if they beat Texas and keep winning, also Michigan State is number 11. You got to figure out what's going on with those guys, because if they keep winning, then they're knocking off some significant teams. I like Cincinnati and I want Cincinnati to be in the playoff, but yeah, this is shaping up to not be fun for Cincinnati.
Right. There's a lot of scenarios. What Cincinnati really needs is just, it's chaos in a way, but they need basically the SEC and the Big Ten to cannibalize themselves. Like they really need that to happen, because it can't be the scenario that we're painting where two of those teams kind of from each conference rise to the top and are playing at a level where they're one's undefeated, one has one loss. Yeah, that would muddy things up for Cincinnati quite a bit. Like they already kind of got over the having the hurdle of having like a Pac-12 representative, but you're not going to have one of them in it. Having Clemson lose really helps the scenario too for them. So they had a couple of things that have already broken correctly for Cincinnati, but they still need some more help. They really do. And it's unfortunate for them, but yeah, that's just the reality right now.
Yeah. Let's transition to Michigan. I think the biggest question with Michigan right now is how real is this 5-0 start for Michigan? So they pound on Western Michigan in the opener. It's 47-14. I don't believe that Western Michigan team has won a ton. Oh, they've won four straight. Never mind. Four straight since the loss. They pound on Western Michigan. They beat a bad Washington team. They absolutely pound on Northern Illinois. They beat Rutgers. They survive against Rutgers 20-13. And they beat a bad Wisconsin team on the road. How real do you think this Michigan team is right now?
Now, I will say on the front end, I like this Michigan team coming into the season, right? But I don't know how real they are. Like, and just kind of thinking about it in the lens of this game coming up against Nebraska, that, and I was just thinking, like, is Nebraska, the way that they're playing right now, the best team that Michigan has faced? Number one is a question. Number two, Adrian Martinez, I think, is clearly the best quarterback that they've played this year. And Memorial Stadium is going to be the toughest environment that they're going to play in this season, right? Even, I mean, playing in Camp Randall is not easy, but that was not a night game, correct? And so, like, it's just going to be different this weekend at Memorial Stadium, especially coming off of the big win against Northwestern. So, like, they're going to get tested this weekend a lot more than you would normally think against the 3-3 team who we don't know if they're like ready to take another step yet, which is why I think the line is the way the line is, and which I also think leads me to believe that Michigan is not fully for real. I just don't know if they're as good as the record indicates. I think that they have a better than expected team. I just don't think that this is I don't think they're a top 10 type of team this year.
This is the Michigan team. Take out last season's weird COVID year. This is Michigan. under Jim Harbaugh? Because what's the biggest question mark with Michigan right now? The passing game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I didn't just look this up. This is from Bill Conley. He had a piece about which teams have earned our trust and which haven't. Major trust issues, but we're working on it. He lists Michigan's passing game. They are filtering out garbage time. They have just a 22% success rate, passing success rate on passing downs, which is 120th in FBS. So what that means, their passing success rate on passing downs is one of the worst in the country. I said that poorly the first time. It's one of the worst in the country, which would, I mean, you know, that's quarterback ability. That's right. The defense knows that you have to throw it. You're throwing it, so you don't have the advantage. How good are you in those situations? And they haven't been great. 22% success rate is eek. So Cade McNamara, you know, we had the joke a week or two ago, like, is JJ McCarthy going to be the starter by the time they come to Nebraska?
Right.
You know, he's obviously not. They're 5-0. There's no, I guess, real urgency to make a quarterback change when you're 5-0. But this is definitely going to be, you know, maybe this is a hot take. This will be the best defense that Michigan has faced.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah, that is. I think that's true. Like, and that to me is what makes this game so interesting, is that Nebraska's strengths play well, I think, against what Michigan wants to do, which is run. Like, they are not going to abandon the run if it doesn't work after one quarter. But at the same time, if you're Nebraska, you have the opportunity to keep yourself on defense ahead of schedule, keep Michigan behind schedule, and make them throw, which, as that success rate indicates, they're not very good at that. Like, and that's where things get, like, can really tilt in Nebraska's favor. So, no, I think that you can, of all the things that we talk about with Nebraska and trying to figure out if you can trust them and if, you know, what's real and what's not, that defense is real. I feel very comfortable going into the game that defense will play at a good level.
Yeah, the question that I got asked a ton in the offseason was, does Nebraska's defense look good on paper because the offenses in the Big Ten are not great? Or does Nebraska's defense look good on paper because it's good on Saturdays? And I always said, you know what? We'll find out. Like, that Oklahoma game is going to tell us a lot about what this defense can do and contextually how good this defense is. And then they did something that few teams have been able to do to a Lincoln Riley-coached Oklahoma offense. I think they opened a lot of eyes and, you know, Nebraska over the last few weeks has shot up S&P Plus and FPI. They are a top 25 team by S&P Plus and by FPI. Specifically with Bill Conley's system, they're a top 25 team because they have a top 20 defense. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's such an interesting defense to talk about, because if you look at some of the traditional numbers, they're not elite in really anything. But, like, I don't know if you read Max Olson's stop rate, which they published in The Athletic this week. It's something that they do every single year. They just look at what percentage of an opponent's drives end in a punt, a turnover, or a turnover on downs. Nebraska's defense currently ranks 8th in the country in stop rate. So, like, they're not Iowa in terms of forcing turnovers. They're not Georgia in terms of forcing sacks and tackles for loss. They're not elite in any one category, but they're just finding ways to get off the field. And it's crazy.
But that had been the thing that we had talked about for the last couple of years, right? Something about their third down percentage rate had been not great. And then it turned in the back half of last season and they just kind of picked up where they left off. And it's funny because it's a perfect way to describe it. They're not elite really in anything, but at the same time, they just don't give stuff up, right? They're just not giving up big plays. They're not, when you look at, well, so there's usually like one per game, in like that Michigan State game where Farmer fell down, which I still don't think that, like, I feel like there was a lot of talk about that particular play and like, oh, Nebraska got with the flea flicker, but people forget or don't, are ignoring that Miles Farmer fell on that or like had a severe stumble. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Nebraska's defense has just been solid. Like, it's just been rock solid without having the two things that you associate with great defense, takeaways and then tackles for loss slash sacks, if they could ever get a little bit more of that, like, you'd never get anything on their defense. But I just don't think that that's how they're going to end up playing defense this year. It's just been a fundamentally sound, really good all around defense.
You bring up fundamentally sound. So if you look at Michigan in FPI and S&P Plus, you look at them in the systems, they're fifth in FPI with a projected 10-2 record, 4.5% chance of winning out. Ohio State is third. So that's why that chance of winning out is low. In FPI, their offense is ranked fifth in terms of efficiency. Their defense is ranked 14th in terms of efficiency. Their special teams is ranked first. In S&P Plus, they are eighth with the 26th ranked offense. I think the discrepancy there is quarterback ability. I think FPI, they got a really good run game. Michigan does. And I'm really excited to see those two running backs. It's Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins sort of in action against Nebraska. So they're 26th in offensive efficiency by S&P Plus. They are eighth in defensive efficiency, third special teams. Nebraska is not good at special teams. I'm not going to give you the numbers. It's not pretty. How big a factor do you think special teams will be in this game? Do you think it will be something like it was against Michigan State, where it is a potentially determining factor? Or because last week we didn't talk about it at all. Like, nobody mentioned them until Pristup hit an 84-yard punt.
A great moment for him. It was so fun to see the team embrace him the way they did. I think he might have gotten a smile out of Scott Frost. I think that what needs to happen, and I think really just being honest, the best case scenario for Nebraska on special teams this weekend is to not have it cost you the game. Just have it be neutral, because I think that Michigan's special team is good enough to where they can really impact the game. And so it's just going to take a lot of attention to detail and effort on that part of the game for Nebraska to even just keep it as a neutral. Like, in one of the best thing that could really happen for Nebraska is early in that game, you hit, just have it be normal. You hit a kickoff out of the end zone. Maybe you get, you know, an extra point that goes straight down the middle. You get a normal punt. I'm not even talking about a boomer, because I think that there's something to Nebraska getting some momentum in that phase of the game and being able to carry that forward. Because what you can't have is, like, say the first time Nebraska has to punt and the punt gets blocked, or you have a shank or something like that, and then the whole rest of the game, it's just this huge storyline of, oh, what's going to happen next with their special teams. I definitely think that it's going to play a factor in Saturday's game. And in a game that probably is going to be close, Nebraska is going to need special teams to kind of carry their water and be okay for them in this game.
Just one note that I want to make. So Bill Conley presents his S&P Plus numbers as basically, like, how many points better than the opposing team are you on a given Saturday? So, like, you look at Georgia's currently number one in S&P Plus with a 27.2 rating. Basically, the way you read that system is if they were to play Michigan tomorrow, which is eighth in S&P Plus with a 19.7 rating, they'd basically be a touchdown favorite. You just subtract the two ratings. So, like, when you look at special teams, so the way that he gets those ratings is then offense for Georgia, 36.9 points per game, defense 9.9 points per game allowed. So their difference of 27. Special teams is 0.2 points better, 0.2 points added. Cool. Michigan is 0.6. So, like, we're talking about, like, just don't screw up.
Right.
Just be anonymous. Be like you were against Northwestern. That's basically all it's asking for you to be good. Like, 0.6 points better is the third best in the country for Michigan. Just be anonymous. We'll see if that can happen again. You talked about a close game. Let's talk about Nebraska now. Okay. And I have the same question for you that I asked you to open the Michigan segment. Do you think Nebraska, this team, is for real? Because the line came out and it was essentially a pick 'em. And then Joel Klatt tweeted, "I've been trying to tell people all year that this Nebraska team is better than you thought." And Bob Stoops said on the Big Noon Kickoff show when Nebraska was playing Oklahoma that this Nebraska team is better than everybody thinks they are. Like I said before, in FPI and S&P Plus, they're a top 25 team, but they're 3-3 with a loss to Illinois. So, like, this Nebraska team has a lot of positive momentum right now, and people are saying a lot of nice things about Nebraska. Is this team for real? Is this team a team that, let's say, 7 times out of 10 will play Michigan close on Saturday? Or is this a team that, you know, maybe we've just gotten ahead of ourselves because they beat a bad Northwestern team?
If Nebraska had just beaten that bad Northwestern team but had not played as well as they did and had inexplicable loss to Michigan State, who's a good football team this year, I think I would say, no, we need to see a little more. I'm hesitantly saying that this Nebraska team is for real. And the hesitation is because I've just seen too much of this, you know what I mean, over the years of like getting burned in this situation. But there are things about this team and the program right now that I really, really like. And to the point to where I didn't think that I would be here. I think that their defense, like I said before, is for real. I think when you turn on Nebraska on Saturdays, you know now what you're going to get from that defense. They're a high-energy group. They're fundamentally sound. They've got good players, I think, at every level of that defense, just not a, like, super-duper star on at any one of the levels. They have a potential All-Big Ten guy in JoJo Doman.
But yeah, JoJo and Luke.
But he's not a – I don't know that either of them are, say, Aiden Hutchinson, where we're talking about like a top 15 pick, right? Like, I think that to me is the line difference. But they do have two of those guys on the second level, which does help, right? And I think they have Damian Daniels, who's playing at a really high level of the defensive line. So,
can I interrupt you for a second?
Go for it.
They don't have Aiden Hutchinson, right? Michigan has an Aiden Hutchinson type. Nebraska doesn't. I was listening to an NBA podcast and they were talking about sometimes, like, I think the conversation was about the Indiana Pacers, they don't have a super duper star, to use your term. Yeah. What they do have is just a bunch of really good players. And I think actually too, they were talking about the Celtics in this regard, which, apologies, Greg, I know how you feel about the Celtics. They just have a bunch of really good players. And I think that's how you would describe Nebraska's defense. Like, there's not a super duper star, but they just have a bunch of really good quality players. And I remember, I think it was Northwestern. It was a recent week where Garrett Nelson is coming off the edge and they're running, I think it was Northwestern. They're running a read option concept and he's the guy that they're reading and he plays it perfectly and stops it at the line of scrimmage. And for some reason, plays from his freshman year just popped into my head. And I remember thinking, like, the second this guy comes on the field, teams know, let's just read him because he's going to crash down on the ball carry every single time. And so we're going to be able to get to the outside if the quarterback pulls it, because he's not reading what's happening. He's just flying to the football. And I was just thinking about it. I was like, this is a good illustration of how much growth Garrett Nelson has made in relatively short amount of time in the program. And I was thinking about it. I was like, I could say that for every single guy that's playing right now. Like, they've been in this program and they've just gotten better to the point where they're just good football players that are playing defense. That's all I wanted to say. Sorry, continue.
No, you're fine. I think that's a perfect way to describe what happened with the defense. And you see that with so many guys. You mentioned Luke Reimer. I think McHenrich is in that. Caleb Tanner is playing his best football as a Husker right now, too. So that makes that whole linebacker group. And then you throw JoJo in there. I think that's why that defense has been so good, because that level on their defense is just really, really good. And then you continue to be able to rotate those guys on the defensive line, which is why I think they have such a good rush defense. But flip it over to the offense. This is where the big question mark really is to determine whether or not Nebraska is for real. Because I could make the argument, and I would hope that Scott Frost, Matt Lubick, Brian Held, Greg Austin, Travis Becton, Sean Becton, all of those guys on the offense have discovered the formula on how they need to play offensively. I feel like we've seen a shift and how they play, whether it's them actually taking shots down the field, them actually trying to be physical at the point of attack with the offensive line, which was greatly determined by whether or not they actually had the right offensive lineman in there or if those guys were actually doing what they were supposed to be doing. I think they obviously found something with the two new linemen that are on the left side. I think they just bring a physicality to that offensive line. The big key is whether or not they can settle in on what's happening at running back. Recording this on Thursday, Scott Frost was asked today about the running back situation. He said it's always ongoing. I don't love that. I wish that, and I know kind of why he would do this, even if it was not ongoing and they've actually settled on the 1-2 punch of Ahmir Johnson and Yant. Like, I hope, to me, that picture looks good. I think that that is something that I can kind of wrap my brain around of an identity. And then, you know, and it's weird, and I described him this way on a different show that I was on this week. I described Adrian Martinez for this particular game as the X factor. And it's weird to say that about a 4-year starting quarterback, but Adrian's playing as well as we've seen him play at Nebraska. He's playing as consistently. He's dynamic. And Michigan hasn't seen a guy like that this year, I don't think. And so if you can put it together, and it's a big if, I think that they're in a good position and they are for real. The problem is we've only seen that for one game, right? And so I can't really, and then now it's tough because you've seen it against a lesser opponent in Northwestern. Nebraska goes out on Saturday and they don't have as good of an offensive showing. I don't think that that means throw it all in the trash, because Michigan's a really good defense too. Like, you have to kind of account for that as well. But that was a very long way of saying, I do think that Nebraska is for real, even at 3-3.
Well, Adrian Martinez, you're right. I mean, he's playing as well as he's played as a Nebraska quarterback. He's 8th nationally in QBR, and he's 3rd nationally in expected points added. Nationally, not just in the Big Ten.
And I should say, too, as we talk about the offense, I should not leave this out. I think the growth from the pass catchers has really helped the whole thing as well. I think that having both Vokolek and Allen in there at tight end, and what they bring specifically because of the matchups that you can create in that, and then starting to have the rise of, I don't know how I want to term this, but the rise of the receivers that everybody wanted to see, I think is how I'll go with that, has been really helpful.
They're putting their best players on the field.
So no joke. My dad called me, it was yesterday, I think, so Wednesday. He calls me and he's like, hey, so I watched the game. And he was like, who is this number 3? And where did 15 come from? And who is number 5? And he's just like listing these guys. And I'm like, well, let me tell you about it. And so I give him like what's kind of been happening with like those guys trying to work their way in. He's like, oh yeah, those dudes need to be out there. Like, that's what people have been saying. It feels like it's finally at the point, though, where those guys can be out there. Xavier Betts got more praise again this week about the growth that he's been making week over week.
Say his name right.
Xavier Jets. Sorry, Jets.
Did that get brought up throughout the week? Was that a thing that was brought up during the week?
It did not come up throughout
the week. Damn it. We're going to make it a thing.
Maybe
it needs
only
to be
because
a thing.
He didn't talk. He didn't talk this week, so maybe that's...
Okay.
We
need another big game from him so that he can get in front of the media and so that somebody can ask him about Xavier Jets, because Peyton, who is a follower of mine on Twitter, tweeted the nickname needs to be Xavier Jets. I put that in my column and then teased it. And then Zach Winemaster quote tweeted that tease with, I'm assuming it's Betts' logo that he's designed for him.
Yeah,
and said, the nickname is Xavier Jets, and the logo is a literal fighter jet. Like, this dude is averaging 15 yards a touch for his career.
Fantastic.
Xavier Jets. Make
Speed
it a thing.
City.
The point about the pass catchers, like, this is what we expected from them, which is cool to say and think about, because we haven't been able to, like, they said this was going to happen in the spring, and then this was the expectation throughout the summer and fall camp, and then it looked the way it was supposed to look once the game started. Like, as they have been healthy, they've pretty much looked the way we expected them to look. They've been a good group.
They definitely have.
Solid guys. And Adrian, by and large, has, you know, looked the way that we expected him to look. He's been efficient. He's taken shots down the field. And he hasn't had, save for Michigan State overtime and, you know, a couple of plays against Illinois, he hasn't had crippling, costly turnovers. The area that just hasn't looked anything like what you expected it to look, and why they, you know, why this game will probably be close, or a big reason for why this game will probably be close, is the offensive line has been woefully inconsistent. Yeah. They ran the ball really well against Northwestern, but Northwestern, I have been saying it all year, they're a bad team that doesn't look defensively the way a Northwestern team typically looks. So the big matchup for me this weekend is Nebraska has Teddy Prochazka at left tackle and Turner Corcoran at right tackle. Two guys who are in, Teddy's in his first year, Turner's in his second year. Michigan has Aiden Hutchinson. Nebraska is going to have to play its best game on the offensive line of the season to give this offense breathing room. Like, do you buy that last week's offensive line performance was, I guess, a sign of things to come, that this is the offensive line that needs to stick going forward? Or do we just have to approach this game with a completely open mind, toss out what happened last week because of the opponent, and say, this is the real test? If this is the line going forward, this is the real test, and this is what we're going to judge them by.
Oh, this is definitely the test for them. But it's, man, it's really hard, though, to say that, to judge them solely on this, just based on, like, having Teddy in his second collegiate start, Nuri in his second start at Nebraska, though he obviously did start at Colorado State, and then Turner still kind of in his second start at that position. Like, that's difficult. And then to go against these dudes in Michigan, I think if Nebraska can replicate some of what they did last week, but the line needs to be better than what you saw in those previous games, even though it's against a better opponent, but not necessarily as good as it was against Northwestern, if that makes sense, because the opponent just isn't probably going to allow for that unless something just wild happens in this game, which I don't expect. Because I also think you got to get, I think this is the line going forward, but I also think that one player, as you were just saying, that came to mind, that's going to be really important this weekend, actually, is Travis Vokolek. Like, I'll be fascinated to see how they use him to then try to counterbalance whichever side Hutchinson is on, to see if they can keep Vokolek on that side as well, to then help out with whichever tackle they're trying to attack with him. That will be a nice chess match. But I also don't want to get too far away from this before I say this, but I don't want to forget it. About the offense. Nebraska's offense is quickly and kind of quietly becoming a group that you have to start game planning for. Like, it used to be, like, even in this season, all you really had to do against Nebraska's offense was try to spy Adrian Martinez, to take him away or to limit him. And then that was basically the whole thing, right? Now, as you start to layer in some of those other elements, I think you have to go into a game understanding, hey, when 15 comes in, Xavier Jets, we need to be on red alert, right? Omar Manning can do various things. Obviously, they're going to try and get Ture the ball quite a bit. Oh, by the way, we've got to account for that 6'8 tight end, Austin Allen, even though they may or may not throw it to him enough, but we still need to know, like, where he is. Like, those sorts of things are starting to stack up for Nebraska's offense, which will only in turn make them better. The whole missing piece, though, of course, though, is what we just started off talking about, which is the running game. Because obviously that's what, for this offense historically, that is the thing that opens up everything else.
And it was open last week. Nebraska had 8 runs of 10 yards or more. And on those 8 runs, they gained 247 rushing yards on just 8 carries against 8 explosive carries against Northwestern. It was open last week. They ran the ball well. Jacques Yant played well. And, you know, I'm still skeptical of Nebraska, given everything that I've seen over the last, my 4 years paying attention to this team. But last weekend's game was about the perfect kind of weekend that you could have leading into this particular matchup. Nebraska ran the ball well. It was super physical at the point of attack. And you go back to, was it 2018 when these two teams met? And some of the comments that were made, I believe Chase Winovich after the game, from the Michigan side of things, were to the effect of, yep, we could tell Nebraska didn't want to hit. And we took the Scott Frost comments from when he was at UCF and we held on to those and we wanted to come out and punch him in the mouth. And we could tell that they weren't really about that. Particularly on defense, this is a tough ass Nebraska defense. They look like a Big Ten defense. I think that's probably going to get bleeped. Apologies for swearing. They look like a tough defense. They embrace physicality. That I don't think that's going to be a question. I don't think the Michigan offense is going to be able to punch them in the mouth in any respects. Offensively, one of the big storylines for me is the Michigan game in 2018 was probably AJ Martinez's worst game of his career.
Yep.
And he's playing as good as we've seen him play now. And that 2018 Michigan defense was really good. It was a Don Brown coach defense, and they did a lot of things that messed with his head. Don Brown is gone. So a lot of the stuff that they were doing, the mismatching stuff that they were doing, teams figured it out. They moved on to a new guy. What is Adrian going to do against this defense this time? I think, you know, they showed last week that they can come out and they can be physical and they can be a downhill run team. And they, it seems like they found a guy that they really like in Ramir Johnson, and Jack Ant had a good showing last week. So how those guys fare in pass protection is going to be interesting this week, particularly to help against a guy like Aiden Hutchinson coming off the edge, if they want to use Travis in passing routes. I think this is a chance for Nebraska to prove it. And, to come off the week that they had last week against Northwestern, to have positive momentum, to have good vibes, I should say, around the program, good vibes around the program. You couldn't ask for a better lead in to this particular kind of game that we're going to see this weekend. Would you agree?
Yes. This is fun. This is back to being fun. I was telling my wife this, like, I'm actually in my like kind of jaded way of like viewing this team. Like, I'm actually very excited about this game, for all of the reasons that you just laid out. And I don't know if you would, cause I've not asked you this yet. And I meant to, were you surprised by how quickly Nebraska's, especially defensive players, went there earlier this week about how they were, I guess, out physical in that 2018 game and how they held on to that, remembered that, because that was clearly not the first time that any of them had thought about that since then. I had not thought about that until those guys, I think it may have been Ben Stille was the first one maybe that brought it up. That kind of took me aback, and I was like, oh, okay. I think these guys are actually like circling this and saying, okay, we're more physical now and we want to go show people.
Yeah, I would expect nothing less. They got punked in Ann Arbor a few years ago. And not only did they get punked on the field, but then Michigan players went into the press conference after the game and just poured salt in the wound. Like,
yeah, didn't one of them say something about them not being prepared? And like,
they were not shy after beating Nebraska. And they clearly held on to stuff that Scott, well, not stuff, one thing that Scott Frost said, right, when he was with a different team. They held, and you know what? I'm not going to judge them for that. That's fine. They held on to that and they went out and, you know, did what they had to do. And so for Nebraska, like, no, I wasn't, you know, that's what I would expect. That's what I would expect.
That's what you would expect from this team now. Like, I think the way that this team is built now and kind of the personality that they're developing, it does make a lot of sense for where they are right now. Like, it's an exciting game.
You know, we don't have to talk about the, well, you know, they're still 3-3. Where's Scott Frost at? Does he need this game? Does he need this signature win? We don't necessarily have to talk about that if you don't want to, but you know, all the jokes are out there that, like, well, Scott Frost adjusted to the Big Ten after he said they would adjust to him. Well, you know what? They kind of did, and it's kind of working. Like, they slowed it down against Oklahoma. They weren't super tempo. I've been looking at some of their plays. You know, they had 84 against Michigan State, but, you know, overtime, but I guess only three plays came in overtime. 74 again. They're not blazing fast right now, but they're a physical team. And I think they're a lot more physical team than anybody thought we would see from this kind of regime when they got here. So you know what, this will be an interesting game. And, you know, I will say, because I am skeptical, if you want the good vibes to last, you have to perform well. This has to be a close game. And, you know, if it's a 14-point game, like, Michigan's still a top 10 team nationally. They're still a pretty good team. So if it's a 14-point game and they lose, you know, it's a loss. But if it looks tight and it looks close, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think the point I'm trying to make is you look for signs of progress and just take this game compared to the last time they played Michigan. It's night and day. They're not the same team anymore.
Yeah, it's 100% night and day on like just the feeling. And even going back to I was asked this week about like when the last time I had this type of big game feeling around here. And I mentioned 2019 Ohio State, the game day game. Yep. But even that,
until it started.
Yeah. And that's exactly the thing. But we all kind of knew that. You knew going into that. Okay, cool. This is awesome. And I'll never forget like the atmosphere around that game and all of that. Like it was so much fun. All the recruits, they had the kid Jackson Bratton there. They were trying to steal from Alabama. Like, remember that? Like they had all of that stuff going. And then the game started because you knew in the back of your mind that I don't think this is going to really go all that well. Like Nebraska would have to have everything in the world break right to keep it close. And then Chase Young happened. So like, it just was not like, so this is a totally different feeling though. I don't feel that Nebraska has to play the game of its life to be in the game because I've seen them play like just decent against Michigan State or pretty well in some respects against Michigan State is a good team and go to overtime in a game that they really should have won. They're a good punt away from winning. So like, I just think that they're in a totally different spot. And I think one of the keys is I think they know that they're in a totally different spot and they're playing with a lot more confidence, especially on defense, because they have just gone out and proven it to kind of repeatedly on the defensive side of the ball.
They were not just a punt away from winning. They had two chances to win on offense and they failed to convert both of those chances.
That is a fact.
That is a fact. It was a very bad punt, but still. But even that, I mean, like I had Drake Keeler on this podcast a week ago and I was like, give me something to feel optimistic about. Give me a sign. Give me something. You know, we got something against Northwestern. We got something. Let's see if it can carry over. Yeah. I distinctly remember the vibe for that Ohio State game. I was on the field when they were doing the tunnel walk and I was like, this is the most incredible atmosphere I have literally ever been in. And that remains true to this day. That pregame was the most electric I have ever seen a stadium for a football game. And like, I've been in big games before I came to Nebraska, I saw big game environments. I'd never seen anything like that. And I guess another, you know, tip of the hat to Nebraska or credit for them being willing to adjust as needed. Like, seems like the environment between the third and fourth quarter was pretty cool. And that was a new thing. Yeah. And if they can find ways like that to get a stadium more engaged, even more engaged than it already was for a night game, if they're willing to try different stuff and do different stuff, you know, that's pretty cool. Like we got a 6:30 kick for this game. It's on ABC. Night game should be a tremendous atmosphere. Maybe if I go on a limb and say tremendous, should be a great atmosphere.
I don't even think that's going on a limb. I think tremendous atmosphere is what it's going to be.
If we can get that kind of a home crowd to sustain that kind of an environment to sustain past, you know, Chase Young coming off the edge and destroying you two plays into the start of the game. Cause that's really what did it. I mean, the atmosphere was just immediately drained with the start. If you get a Samori Toure 70-yard pass, the first play of the game again, like we got some stuff.
And that's one question, honestly, a key real quick. That to me, that is a key to make Michigan a little uncomfortable early, just because if to keep that
70-yard Toure pass.
I mean, yeah, that'll do it. But like try and if Nebraska can do that and to keep that crowd engaged, the longer they can do that, the better off they'll be.
I would petition Scott Frost to do the 70-yard pass on the first play of the game. That would lead to success. If he doesn't do the 70-yard pass on the first play of the game, that will not lead to success. So, Scott, please call the 70-yard pass play. I know you listen to this podcast. I know you have power to do so. Call the 70-yard pass play. If not, you know, we'll see what happens. One thing that I wanted to ask you before you get out of here, because you've been very adamant as a Clay Helton hater at USC. You're running the USC athletic department and you're handling the search for the new head coach. How soon after you get off this podcast are you picking up the phone and calling Urban Meyer?
I am not. I'm not calling him. We're going to go ahead and delete that number. And really, though, what we're going to do is we're going to stay in the Big Ten, though, and we're just going to call James Franklin, and we're going to say, listen, people have been trying to woo you for years out of Happy Valley. You're doing a great job this year in getting that team, which is pretty good, but it's not really elite. Like, we're going to get you out of there, get you to USC. You'll be great here with these athletes. We'll try to get the boosters out of meddling, and you'll be great here at USC. James Franklin, come be my coach, please. I'm leaving.
Is USC a better job?
Yes, because you Why? Can – because I think that you
have – Penn State's fourth in the country right now.
Yeah, but I think that you have an easier, more consistent path to winning the Pac-12 than you do the Big Ten. I think that you have to be – you. I think you just have to have so many things break right to end up coming out on top of the Big Ten in a given year that you don't have to have in the Pac-12. Now, the problem, though, is that if you're in the Pac-12 and you lose one time, you're basically out. Like, and so that ends up being kind of the problem. But, like, I just wouldn't – I would not – and maybe this is – it sounds like a lack of competitor in me, but I would not want to have to always deal with Ohio State and Michigan, who's always going to be pretty good. Then whichever upstart team there is in the East, it's been Indiana, but it could be someone else, then have to deal with, say, Iowa, Wisconsin, when they come back, who knows what happens with Nebraska. Northwestern is usually consistent. Like, I just don't think that depth that I just rattled off and probably forgot someone just doesn't exist in the Pac-12, where essentially if you're at USC, you're competing now with Oregon, who their rise is in a large part fueled by the fact that USC is down because they're getting a lot of California players. Go out there, keep those guys home, prosper.
Oregon's rise is because they had cool uniforms.
I mean, it was before. Yeah, before.
And because they had Chip Kelly.
Chris was a good coach. But he also kind of went a different way with the physicality that they played with. Yeah, but I don't know.
Don't discredit Chip Kelly in all of this. Chip Kelly is a good coach, as evidenced by UCLA being a competent team and a pretty fun team at the start of the year. They had a revolutionary offense. Take advantage of USC being poo-poo.
No. I mean right now, not then. Then, no, it was them being revolutionary. And I want to make sure I get that, because in case Scott Frost and the rest of the staff are listening to this and half.
Well, we do know he listens to this podcast.
Yeah, like half of them are from there. I don't want to make it seem like y'all weren't, you know, revolutionizing the game. They were. But I mean now, I think that a large part that people don't talk about Oregon being as good as they are in Amara Cristobal is USC being down.
Okay, so one thing that you said, we'll get the boosters to stop meddling. That ain't happening, man. There are certain schools where that just doesn't happen. Texas is one of them. It feels like USC is another one. Like, I don't know if I'd want to go coach in LA, a college team. It just seems like there's just a lot of stuff that would come with that wouldn't be conducive to a winning environment or a good culture.
The problem is, though, is if you get that rolling, as evidenced under Pete Carroll, if you get it rolling at USC, it can be really, really good. Like,
but is Pete Carroll the only one that's done that at USC?
To that level, yeah, especially in recent time, like in the modern era, yeah.
So is that because of USC or is that because of Pete Carroll, who is, by the way, Super Bowl winning coach?
I mean, that's a fair question. Fair question.
I'm just saying, I don't know.
They just have such great access to players. They get, like, it's just so, like, there are just so many. You look up and down, like, go look, like, Alabama's quarterback who's from L.A. but not playing at USC, like the kid at Clemson who will eventually be better. He's just taking his lumps. He just didn't hit the ground running like the other guys that they had. Like, that guy's from LA. Like, it's just weird that there's just so many of these players that are all over the country, especially quarterback, that you, and, but even in that scenario, like, I actually think the younger quarterback that USC went to is actually pretty good. It's just, I think that it's ripe for the picking. If you can get out there and get the thing going, that you can really get it rolling at USC, especially in that conference. I just wouldn't want to deal with the Big Ten.
Okay, so you are the perfect person to ask this question to, because this is a question that I have been wondering about. You talk about the the most fertile recruiting grounds in the country. You think of states, Texas, California, Florida, Georgia. Would you put Georgia in there?
Georgia.
So the most fertile recruiting grounds. If you have a good USC, does that immediately mean that no California recruits are leaving the state? Because that's not what happens in Florida or Texas or Georgia.
It doesn't mean that none of them are leaving the state. It means that you get the best ones. And then you can also, because you have such a national brand, can go anywhere else in the country and pick off good players as well. I think that that's what it means, because I just don't think it's realistic anymore to be like, yeah, we're going to keep all of them. Like, I just don't like, and you're right, to the point of like Texas and Florida schools, like it just doesn't go that way. But in part, it doesn't go that way, say in Florida, because that guy, Nick Saban at Alabama, just sets up shop and out in Florida and just gets all of the players that he wants. And then in terms of Texas, like Ohio State has done a great job of saying, hey, we're going to start going there. Go look at their wide receivers that come from Texas. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are other teams that have figured out, while other major programs in those states are down, hey, we're going to go pick off your talent. Like, and that happened to a degree with USC and California as well.
I mean, I guess Nebraska was able to set up a little Cal-Nebraska pipeline when USC was down.
They were.
Okay, that's a great example. Is Nebraska able to go get California kids if USC is a consistent power? Or are those kids not having a chance at USC anyway?
No, I don't think Nebraska would be getting those kids. But it doesn't seem like Nebraska is any more going after those kids anyway. Nebraska, I think if you ask Nebraska, like, hey, what's the other big school that you would like to be competing with recruits for? I actually think it would be Georgia. If you could pick someone.
Man, that's a tough hill to climb.
But it would be, it's a very tough hill to climb. But yeah, I think that would be, and then maybe like Florida, ironically, given, you know, how Scott Frost got here and the job that being the other job that he was really up for consideration for. But yeah, I think it would be Georgia.
Hey man, I guess, if you know, shoot for the stars, and if you miss, you still might hit the moon, you know, like one of those situations.
But because of how, that's a great analogy, because of how much talent is in those states, yeah, you're not going to get like the big time five star, but getting a solid four star out of Georgia, or even a high three star, means you got a starter, you know, like in Quentin Newsom, for example, or Gabe Irvin. Like, that's how that goes.
Yeah. Greg, you got to get out of here. You got work to do. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Appreciate talking to you.
Hey, thanks as always for having me.
Listen to Greg's podcast. Once again, the Straight Up Breakdown podcast. Leave him a 5-star review or what, Greg?
Then I am inclined to think you're a hater and nobody wants that.
Love it. Love it. I love that exit every single week. Love it. I had to do it. Keep reading HillVarsity.com. Listen to this podcast. Appreciate you guys. We'll be back next week.
A Huda Media Production.